Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel avanzado C2. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Colombia has a hippo problem. Normally, these 4,000-pound beasts wallow in the lazy waters of sub-Saharan Africa, but in the 1980s, drug lord Pablo Escobar had money to burn.
Pablo Escobar had this idea that he could kind of create a Noah's Ark, if you like, and so he started collecting animals from all over the world and creating this personal zoo.
That's Emma Clifford, founder and director of Animal Balance, an NGO focusing on controlling animal populations without culling them. She says among those walking two by two at Escobar's sprawling hideout were 4 hippos from Africa he smuggled into the country. After Escobar was killed in 1993, most of his exotic animals were moved to other zoos around the country, but not the hippos.
The hippos were left because they're so large, they're rather difficult to move. And so the hippos continue to breed, and now there's estimated between 80 and 100 hippos living in the Magdalena River Basin area.
40 of them are still living at the Escobar Estate east of Medellin, which has been turned into a kind of hippo amusement park, attracting tourists. For the last year or so, Clifford's group has been working with local scientists to study these captive animals to try and figure out how to control the rest of the bunch, which are lumbering through the Colombian countryside, an invasive species for the ages. Despite the bad rap hippos have for being ornery, you know, never get between a hippo and its water, Clifford says locals have grown to love these interlopers and their contribution to the tourist economy.
And if the hippos come through the villages at nighttime, which is tends to happen when they go for walkabout at nighttime, the people respect them and give them the space that they so deserve.
And she says the hippos have scared away the illegal fishermen.
It used to be that they would use dynamite explosives for certain kinds of fishing, and now that's not happening. And so in some ways, the hippos are actually protecting the area of the river.
But Colombia's lush lowlands are hippo heaven, and their numbers are exploding, according to Jonathan Schurin. He is a professor of ecology, behavior, and evolution at the University of California, San Diego, and is the leader of a team studying the hippo's impact on the rivers and lakes.
There was recently done a modeling exercise mapping their potential habitat, and that one estimated that they would top out of in around 1 to 2,000 or so animals once they've sort of filled all the available habitat around the Magdalena River.
Fortunately, says Shuren, the hippos are hemmed in by the Andes, so they won't be showing up in the Amazon. But their growing numbers are a problem. Their feces trigger algae blooms and make the water toxic to fish. And with their massive appetites, hippos are competing for the same grasses and fruits eaten by native species. There were attempts in the past to cull the hippos, but locals were outraged after soldiers shot one. Now it's illegal to kill them. So scientists are working on a birth control plan for the pachyderm. It's no small task to sterilize these huge animals, but researchers hope that they will be able to lure them out of the lakes and rivers with some sweet carrots, dart them with a tranquilizer, and inject them with a sterilizing chemical. If they are successful, says Shurkin, the days of the grandchildren of Pablo Escobar's hippos may be numbered.
Potentially, if you sterilize these ones and they stopped having new hippos, then these guys would live out their days, and then once these ones died, there would be no more.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Colombia has a hippo problem. Normally, these 4,000-pound beasts wallow in the lazy waters of sub-Saharan Africa, but in the 1980s, drug lord Pablo Escobar had money to burn.
Pablo Escobar had this idea that he could kind of create a Noah's Ark, if you like, and so he started collecting animals from all over the world and creating this personal zoo.
That's Emma Clifford, founder and director of Animal Balance, an NGO focusing on controlling animal populations without culling them. She says among those walking two by two at Escobar's sprawling hideout were four hippos from Africa he smuggled into the country. After Escobar was killed in 1993, most of his exotic animals were moved to other zoos around the country, but not the hippos.
The hippos were left because they're so large, they're rather difficult to move. And so the hippos continue to breed, and now there's estimated between 80 and 100 hippos living in the Magdalena River Basin area.
40 of them are still living at the Escobar Estate east of Medellin, which has been turned into a kind of hippo amusement park, attracting tourists. For the last year or so, Clifford's group has been working with local scientists to study these captive animals to try and figure out how to control the rest of the bunch, which are lumbering through the Colombian countryside, an invasive species for the ages. Despite the bad rap hippos have for being ornery, you know, never get between a hippo and its water, Clifford says locals have grown to love these interlopers and their contribution to the tourist economy.
And if the hippos come through the villages at nighttime, which is tends when it tends to happen, when they go for walkabout at nighttime, the people respect them and give them the space that they so deserve.
And she says the hippos have scared away the illegal fishermen.
It used to be that they would use dynamite explosives for certain kinds of fishing, and now that's not happening. And so in some ways, the hippos are actually protecting the area of the river.
But Colombia's lush lowlands are hippo heaven, and their numbers are exploding, according to Jonathan Shuren. He is a professor of ecology, behavior, and evolution at the University of California, San Diego, and is the leader of a team studying the hippos' impact on the rivers and lakes.
There was recently done a modeling exercise mapping their potential habitat, and that one estimated that they would top out of in around 1,000 to 2,000 or so animals once they've sort of filled all the available habitat around the Magdalena River.
Fortunately, says Shuren, the hippos are hemmed in by the Andes, so they won't be showing up in the Amazon, but their growing numbers are a problem. Their feces trigger algae blooms and make the water toxic to fish, and with their massive appetites, hippos are competing for the same grasses and fruits eaten by native species. There were attempts in the past to cull the hippos, but locals were outraged after soldiers shot one. Now it's illegal to kill them, so scientists are working on a birth control plan for the pachyderms. It's no small task to sterilize these huge animals, but researchers hope that they will be able to lure them out of the lakes and rivers with some sweet carrots, dart them with a tranquilizer, and inject them with a sterilizing chemical. If they are successful, says Shurkin, the days of the grandchildren of Pablo Escobar's hippos may be numbered.
Potentially, if you sterilize these ones and they stopped having new hippos, then these guys would live out their days, and then once these ones died, there would be no more.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract 0.
You will be constantly humbled by how much you don't know. The more I do this work, the more I've begun to understand how complicated mental health is, and how much medical illnesses impact mental health, and how there's a world of medical illnesses that I don't know about and never been exposed to.
Extract 1.
You have to be someone who, when your treatment doesn't work as expected, that you can learn from that setback, that you can see failures as opportunities to grow.
Extract 2.
It is deeply meaningful work. My job is to help people navigate, overcome some of the most difficult experiences they will have in their lives. What a privilege. I get to be a part of their journey in finding growth and finding their own meaning and purpose.
Extract 3.
More difficult is the impact doing therapy has on your mind. I am with people as they're going through very difficult experiences. And the more you do that kind of work, it starts to make you question things as well. It's something called vicarious trauma, where you might start to actually question your beliefs about the world, about other people, about the future.
Extract 4.
It can be very draining to do a large volume of this work. You have to get very good at understanding your own emotions, learning how to manage your own emotions, learning how to tolerate distress, learning how to get help, really being able to take care of yourself if you're going to be doing this work full time.
Extract 5.
Is so nice because they're all such good listeners. They know how much to listen, how much to validate, how much to problem solve, how much to push me, how much to help me just sit and accept. Oh, it's when I'm going through tough stuff, it's the best to have therapist friends.
Extract 6.
You're going to deal with turf wars. And probably the biggest one is the discipline and degree. Whether you have a master's degree, a PhD, a PsyD, a psychiatry MD or a DO, people who are trained in certain models or schools of thought or have certain degrees become very much invested in that approach and that philosophy. I've been guilty of this myself. We have a hard time as a field uniting across these different differences we have and advocating for mental health and for our patients.
Extract 7.
When you work as a therapist, your income is directly related to how many people you see. Most people will reach a ceiling where you've seen as many people as you can see in a week. You can't fit in more patients to generate more income. So then maybe you can raise your fees if you're someone who's not participating in insurance, you're out of network provider. But at some point, you're going to reach the limits of that as well. If you're thinking about going into this,
Extract 8.
You need to think of yourself as a business and have multiple streams of revenue. Not just have all your income based on one-to-one patient encounters, but to have workshops that you do on the side, workshops that you might do for schools at a very low or free rate, but those generate other opportunities, like doing workshops for businesses that might be able to pay more money, or doing continuing education training for other therapists. Maybe you're going to be developing media or training resources, things like that. You want to have, or consulting is another way to earn some revenue on the side. You want to have multiple streams of revenue so you aren't dependent purely on just seeing patients one-to-one, because
Extract 9.
You are largely the only one in the room who gets to say what happens in that therapy session, how you manage it, how you approach it, how you use therapeutic skills, what type of treatment you use, how you implement it. You're kind of your own boss in that situation.
Extract 10.
Most treatments are still based upon one person talking to another person. Maybe sometimes one person working with a group of people in the same room. we're never going to have enough therapists to meet the mental health demands of all the people who need support. It's not going to work in this model, this one-to-one or one-to-group model. So the field of mental health is ripe for disruption, for developing AI that is going to work throughout apps and help a vast majority of people who may never be able to access in-person treatment, for more media-based support.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract zero.
You will be constantly humbled by how much you don't know. The more I do this work, the more I've begun to understand how complicated mental health is and how much medical illnesses impact mental health and how there's a world of medical illnesses that I don't know about and never been exposed to.
Extract one.
You have to be someone who, when your treatment doesn't work as expected, that you can learn from that setback, that you can see failures as opportunities to grow.
Extract two.
It is deeply meaningful work. My job is to help people navigate, overcome some of the most difficult experiences they will have in their lives. What a privilege. I get to be a part of their journey in finding growth and finding their own meaning and purpose.
Extract three.
More difficult is the impact doing therapy has on your mind. I am with people as they're going through very difficult experiences. And the more you do that kind of work, it starts to make you question things as well. It's something called vicarious trauma, where you might start to actually question your beliefs about the world, about the about other people, about the future.
Extract four.
It can be very draining to do a large volume of this work. You have to get very good at understanding your own emotions, learning how to manage your own emotions, learning how to tolerate distress, learning how to get help, really being able to take care of yourself if you're going to be doing this work full time.
Extract five.
It's so nice because they're all such good listeners. They know how much to listen, how much to validate, how much to problem solve, how much to push me, how much to help me just sit and accept. Oh, it's when I'm going through tough stuff, it's the best to have therapist friends.
Extract six.
You're going to deal with turf wars. It's in, probably the biggest one is the discipline and degree. Whether you have a master's degree, a PhD, a PsyD, a psychiatry MD or a DO, people who are trained in certain models or schools of thought or have certain degrees become very much invested in that approach and that philosophy. I've been guilty of this myself. We have a hard time as a field uniting across these different differences we have, and advocating for mental health and for our patients.
Extract 7.
When you work as a therapist, your income is directly related to how many people you see. Most people will reach a ceiling where you've seen as many people as you can see in a week. You can't fit in more patients to generate more income. So then maybe you can raise your fees if you're someone who's not participating in insurance, you're out-of-network provider. But at some point, you're going to reach the limits of that as well. If you're thinking about going into this...
Extract 8.
You need to think of yourself as a business and have multiple streams of revenue. Not just have all your income based on one-to-one patient encounters, but to have workshops that you do on the side, workshops that you might do for schools at a very low or free rate, but those generate other opportunities, like doing workshops for businesses that might be able to pay more money, or doing continuing education training for other therapists. Maybe you're going to be developing media or training resources, things like that. You want to have, or consulting is another way to earn some revenue on the side. You want to have multiple streams of revenue so you aren't dependent purely on just seeing patients one-to-one, because...
Extract 9.
You are largely the only one in the room who gets to say what happens in that therapy session, how you manage it, how you approach it, how you use therapeutic skills, what type of treatment you use, how you implement it. You're kind of your own boss in that situation.
Extract 10.
Most treatments are still based upon one person talking to another person. Maybe sometimes one person working with a group of people in the same room. We're never going to have enough therapists to meet the mental health demands of all the people who need support. It's not going to work in this model, this one-to-one or one-to-group model. So the field of mental health is ripe for disruption, for developing AI that is going to work throughout apps and help a vast majority of people who may never be able to access in-person treatment, for more media-based support.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 2. Tarea 3. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
One of the first questions that everyone asks is, which visa should I apply for? If you've started your search, you'll quickly realize there's a lot of different visas out there. Getting to Australia on a student visa, working holiday visa, or visitor visa may not be so difficult, but gaining permanent residency takes very careful planning. For the rest of this episode, I'm going to cover skilled visas and employer-sponsored visas. Within skilled visas alone, there are a number of visas that you might be eligible for, each with different requirements. The Skilled Independent 189 visa makes you a permanent resident and, as the name suggests, is done independently and without a third party such as a sponsoring employer, state or family in Australia. You are scored on a points test for this visa and the Immigration Department policy picks only the top scorers. Now, competition has been growing every year, but this year especially, with the COVID-19 pandemic in play, the number of applications being selected seems to be further limited. Alongside fierce competition, the minimum point score needed to be offered a place has risen to unreachable levels for most applicants. Now, the Skilled Nomination 190 visa, this is where you apply to an Australian state or territory for sponsorship. You are obliged, although it is not enforced, to stay in the state or territory. To get this visa, you have to fulfill the Immigration Department criteria and, in addition, state or territory nomination criteria. Nomination criteria refers to requirements that you must meet for state or territory to select you. Each region has different requirements. Some place tougher standards on certain occupations and some give special waivers or preference to those who have graduated from that state. State or territories can change their requirements at any time, and applications are not open all year round. The same goes for Skilled Work Regional 491 visa. Applicants for the 491 are similarly subjected to additional nomination criteria. However, the 491 visa is a temporary visa that is valid up to 5 years, and with the 491, you actually do need to stay in a designated regional area for 3 years before you can apply for permanent residency via the Skilled Regional 191 visa. If you still aren't eligible for any of the skilled visas, you might look at employer-sponsored visas. Like the skilled visa category, there are employer-sponsored visas that grant you permanent residency straight away, and visas where you have to work through stages on temporary visas before you will be eligible for permanent residency. Some also require you to stay in regional areas. Generally, the easier the visa is to get, the more restricted it is. I hope that helps in terms of an introduction, but I know I haven't given you any help which visa you should apply for. Unfortunately, there's no blueprint that I can give you to help you to figure that out. I can, however, give you some guidelines as how you can accelerate your search. First of all, skilled and employer-sponsored visas are based on what your occupation is. Each skilled and employer-sponsored visa subclass has a different list of eligible occupations. Following that concept of the easier the visa it is, the more restrictive it is, visas like the 189 visa will have the smallest range of occupations. The 491 visa has the broadest occupation list. Each state has a different occupation list based upon their retrospective labour market needs. And if your occupation is on the 491 list, you still need to check which states are welcoming your specific occupation. Still, it's a good place to start. Knowing which visas you might be eligible for narrows down your search immensely. Fortunately for you, Australian Immigration Law Services team has compiled the occupation lists across the major skilled and employer-sponsored visas. Using this complete occupation list, you can search by your occupation and see which visas you may be eligible for. Once you know which visas you might be eligible for, it's an elimination process in finding out if you meet all the other requirements for a visa subclass. Now, if you decide the employer-sponsored visa best suits your needs, bear in mind that the company who sponsors you has a number of requirements they must meet to obtain permission to be a sponsor and also what occupation they are permitted to nominate. This category of visa tends to be more scrutinized by the Immigration Department due to a history of businesses profiting off hopeful migrants. Please do be aware of your rights as an employee and don't compromise yourself for the sake of a visa. There are a number of other issues that may complicate you getting a visa, such as previous non-compliance of visa conditions or application refusals. If you need advice that is specific to your circumstances, do book a consultation with our team. All of us are highly experienced.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
One of the first questions that everyone asks is, which visa should I apply for? If you started your search, you'll quickly realize there's a lot of different visas out there. Getting to Australia on a student visa, working holiday visa, or visitor visa may not be so difficult, but gaining permanent residency takes very careful planning. For the rest of this episode, I'm going to cover skilled visas and employer-sponsored visas. Within skilled visas alone, there are a number of visas that you might be eligible for, each with different requirements. The Skilled Independent 189 visa makes you a permanent resident and, as the name suggests, is done independently and without a third party such as a sponsoring employer, state or family in Australia. You are scored on a points test for this visa, and the Immigration Department policy picks only the top scorers. Now, competition has been growing every year, but this year especially, with the COVID-19 pandemic in play, the number of applications being selected seems to be further limited. Alongside fierce competition, the minimum point score needed to be offered a place has risen to unreachable levels for most applicants. Now, the Skilled Nomination 190 visa, this is where you apply to an Australian state or territory for sponsorship. You are obliged, although it is not enforced, to stay in the state or territory. To get this visa, you have to fulfill the Immigration Department criteria and, in addition, state or territory nomination criteria. Nomination criteria refers to requirements that you must meet for state or territory to select you. Each region has different requirements. Some place tougher standards on certain occupations and some give special waivers or preference to those who have graduated from that state. State or territories can change their requirements at any time, and applications are not open all year round. The same goes for Skilled Work Regional 491 visa. Applicants for the 491 are similarly subjected to additional nomination criteria. However, the 491 visa is a temporary visa that is valid up to 5 years, and with the 491 you actually do need to stay in a designated regional area for 3 years before you can apply for permanent residency via the Skilled Regional 191 visa. If you still aren't eligible for any of the skilled visas, you might look at employer-sponsored visas. Like the skilled visa category, there are employer-sponsored visas that grant you permanent residency straight away, and visas where you have to work through stages on temporary visas before you will be eligible for permanent residency. Some also require you to stay in regional areas. Generally, the easier the visa is to get, the more restricted It is. I hope that helps in terms of an introduction, but I know I haven't given you any help which visa you should apply for. Unfortunately, there's no blueprint that I can give you to help you to figure that out. I can, however, give you some guidelines as how you can accelerate your search. First of all, skilled and employer-sponsored visas are based on what your occupation is. Each skilled and employer-sponsored visa subclass has a different list of eligible occupations. Following that concept of the easier the visa it is, the more restrictive it is, visas like the 189 visa will have the smallest range of occupations. The 491 visa has the broadest occupation list. Each state has a different occupation list based upon their retrospective labor market needs. And if your occupation is on the 491 list, you still need to check which states are welcoming your specific occupation. Still, it's a good place to start. Knowing which visas you might be eligible for narrows down your search immensely. Fortunately for you, Australian Immigration Law Services team has compiled the occupation lists across the major skilled and employer-sponsored visas. Using this complete occupation list, you can search by your occupation and see which visas you may be eligible for. Once you know which visas you might be eligible for, it's an elimination process in finding out if you meet all the other requirements for a visa subclass. Now, if you decide the employer-sponsored visa best suits your needs, bear in mind that the company who sponsors you has a number of requirements they must meet to obtain permission to be a sponsor, and also what occupation they are permitted to nominate. This category of visa tends to be more scrutinized by the Immigration Department due to a history of businesses profiting off hopeful migrants. Please do be aware of your rights as an employee and don't compromise yourself for the sake of a visa. There are a number of other issues that may complicate you getting a visa, such as previous non-compliance of visa conditions or application refusals. If you need advice that is specific to your circumstances, do book a consultation with our team. All of us are highly experienced.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 3. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.